8:39, Galesburg's Morning News, talking District 205 budgets, possible cuts, and different scenarios here in the upcoming year and the next school year, the next fiscal year. District 205 Superintendent Ralph Grimm joining us here this morning. The board met on Monday night, and a lot of different proposals, possibilities out there. And, you know, let me preface it by saying this is nothing you want to do. You didn't want to come in here and say, okay, here's what we're just going to start slashing things. That's not what you want to do as a superintendent. As you said, the education of the students comes first.
Well, I've said it. I've said it many times, and I know that there's a popular rumor out there that that's why I was brought in here, and in fact, that's just categorically not true. But you know, I am responsible for the finances of the district. I am responsible for the district being able to pay their bills. I am responsible to the taxpayers of the community, the business community in this school district, and they are all very supportive, and we're very appreciative of that. But again, it comes down to if the state pays their bills and gives us the money that we anticipate, we will create a budget that forces us, if you will, to live within our means. And yet at the same time, we have to be responsible and we have to say, yeah, you know, there's a number of kids that we want to be in each class. We're not going to go above that. But where we find ourselves now is that's not the reality. It hasn't been in school districts in Illinois for the last probably 5 to 8 years, maybe even 10 years. And so we have to pay more attention to the financial side. It's just the nature of being in the business. And if that's what it calls for, then that's what I'm prepared to do. But I would much rather be talking, as we said in the last segment, about what new program can we offer? How many more teachers can we hire? What other things can we do to meet the social and emotional learning needs of our students? That's a whole lot more fun. But that's not reality right now.
Let's start some of those myths and rumors out there. You want to cut the teacher's salaries, but you won't cut your own administrator's salaries. Well, number one, nobody's salaries are getting cut. There's contracts out there. They're not getting cut. There is a freeze that may be asked for, and I assume that includes everybody district-wide.
Exactly. We have not, nor will we, ask anyone to take a pay cut. The proposal is for 100% of district employees, myself included, to take what we call a hard freeze for next year. That's approximate savings of about $1.2 million. Again, when you look at our stakeholders and you realize that there are a number of people in this community who have not had a raise for 4 or 5 years, and we hear that quite frequently, it doesn't seem right that just because a group has gotten a raise every year, that continue. You know, we are in a crisis. And when you're in those situations, you have to look for solutions that are not what you would normally look to. Is that a dramatic step? Sure it is. It's going to require consultation with the unions. It's going to require reaching agreements with the unions. But that means they have to come to the table and talk to us instead of shoot the messenger. And we need for that to happen sooner rather than later. They can dispute the facts. They can put out whatever information they want. But at the end of the day, I'll stand on the facts that I've presented the board. And just because they want to put out something else doesn't make it so. The reality is this district is in a financial crisis. My job is to make the money last as long as possible. And so we're throwing out all options. We threw out this option last year. All staff, 100%, every person who draws a paycheck, take a freeze. The unions chose not to engage in those conversations. They did have some preliminary conversations with us, and for that we were thankful. Frankly, when the budget agreement for education got taken care of in June, late June, very late June, it kind of took the immediacy of that hard freeze off the table. But this year it's back on because that's an area where we can save a significant amount of money and quite possibly not make so many additional cuts.
Next would be, I think people don't understand health, life, safety. There's talk, and we'll get into this more, about a changing of buildings, moving students from one to another. Health, life, safety, these are things, and especially when you're looking at the structures, these are actually, I don't know if they're state or federal requirements.
They're state requirements, and we've talked about this on this program in the past. Our buildings have to be kept current to the current existing building codes. We go through this evaluation every 10 years. The evaluation, when we did this a couple of years ago, one of the first things that we initiated when I started, showed that we need to make $26 million worth of repairs. We have been ordered by the state board to make those repairs. So the district is going to spend $26 million no matter what. No matter whether anybody likes it, they agree with it, they understand it, we are ordered to spend $26 million. And so that, to me, begged a couple of questions as we looked at the need to spend that $26 million. Can we spend that money differently than what was called for and accomplish efficiency in the number of buildings that we operate? And if so, what would that take? And that's really what the board was presented Monday night, the results of a study, which I called for in the building, the district revitalization plan, which I gave the board last January, a study of the buildings. Do we need 10? And so we took into account our enrollment decline and our enrollment patterns. Can we operate more efficiently with fewer buildings? You know, intuitively, the answer to that is yes, we can. Well, we're going to find out. That's one of the things that we asked the architect to do as a result of his presentation Monday night. But then we started looking at, okay, if we're going to go this far, let's go the extra step and say, how can we deliver our educational product and services better? Can we achieve better collaboration among teachers, for example? Can we improve communication with parents if we group our buildings differently? And we asked the architect to look at that as well. And so Monday night, he presented 9 different options. Now, we are a long way from the board making any decision about any building. There have been no preconceived ideas floated to the board about what to do. Monday night, the board got a wealth of information. They did an excellent job. They listened. They asked critical questions. They asked for additional information. Monday night was the start of a long process. This is not Operation Rebuild all over again. Operation Rebuild is dead. What we're trying to do is position the district for the next 10 or 15 years from an operational standpoint. What makes the most sense? If you believe, as I do, that enrollment's not going to significantly improve or increase over the next few years, then we have to say, can we get by with 7 buildings? Can we get by with 8? And if we can, then what does that look like? How best can we group our students and our teachers to provide the best product possible? Oh, and by the way, if operationally we can save significant dollars over a 10-year period, we should be doing that. And that's what this study is designed to do.
Well, and I suppose that just because of the nature of things, you'd like to stand back and take a really long look at these things, and that's what you're trying to do, obviously. But with the finances being as they are, maybe it necessitates that these things get pushed a little faster. You know, you said 9 choices. Maybe you have to look at that list a little more quickly than maybe you would have in the past. Is that right?
Absolutely. Because the operational savings won't be realized until we close the buildings. And so we've laid out a timeline of 18 to 24 months, maybe 15 to 18 months, before the board could be in a position to award a bid for anything that they decide to do. And if they don't decide to do anything, then, you know, we know how to go forward from there. And then you've got probably a 15 to 18 month construction period if there is anything along those lines that need to be done. And then you'll start to see the operational savings. So, again, part of my job is to project where do we need to be 10 years from now. And this particular initiative is more designed to protect the district 5, 8, 10 years out than to get any immediate results. And that's part of what we should be doing.
District 205 Superintendent Ralph Grimm joining us here this morning on Galesburg's Morning News. What are those other things floating out there? Class size. If you combine buildings and class size would possibly increase. And again, best case scenario, you know, the state's been doing their job, meaning the district's got a surplus and we can hire even more teachers and have, you know, 50 buildings and have four students per teacher in every class. Well, not the case, and that's never going to be the case. So that's one of the concerns that people have. But then I saw another one. I think one of the board members, Wayne Statham, mentioned, like, hey, what about all the grade schoolers having a chance at some point to go through that Silas school in that Silas Willard building? I saw people saying, well, it's not about the building, it's about the teachers. Well, yeah, partially. It is about the teachers, but it's not like there's not great teachers at each of these buildings. Plus, that is part of the experience. Like I said, with the health, life, safety, being in a building with the technology and, you know, being everything updated. So that is part of the experience, too.
Well, sure. And in my work with architects over the last 10 years, there's been a change in their thinking. And really it is, how can the building be structured, built, remodeled to enhance and facilitate the curriculum delivery? And technology is driving a lot of that, frankly. In many of our older buildings, we don't have the infrastructure for technology that we need to be able to do what we want to do with our one-to-one devices. So that conversation is changing just a little bit. The single most important factor in student success is the teacher that stands in front of the class every day. But the building is very important as well.
You know, one of the things that a lot of talk about, so a couple of the proposals include Churchill closing and the middle school or junior high students moving to Lombard. And somebody says, well, you drive by and look at the facade of Lombard. That's such a much older building, and Churchill's much newer. Well, one, Churchill's not new by any means. Two, there's so much more work that needs to go into that building, and part of that $26 million, and there's already been a lot of that done at Lombard.
Lombard needs approximately $7.6 million. We're still operating Lombard with the original footprint that was built in 1955. There have been no substantial renovations, to Churchill since that building was built in 1955. Now, that doesn't mean it's a bad building, but it needs a new roof. There's asbestos in the floor tile. There are heating, ventilation, and air conditioning issues, although I don't believe that building's air conditioned. And so we'll spend $7.6 million and nobody will notice it. But it's a functional building. It's located in a part of town that's easy to get to. Traffic pattern around that school is good from all four directions, basically. At Lombard, the traffic pattern is a little more difficult. It's just more difficult to go all the way around that Lombard campus. Certainly, the Lombard building has a significant amount of renovation that's been done over the last however long it was, 5 years, 4 years. So even though it is an older building, there have been some significant upgrades to that building.
Ralph, for a stretch of years, we saw a lot of schools consolidate with neighbors. Mm-hmm. That probably slowed down a little bit. I mean, you can only consolidate so much. Do you think there's another round of that potentially coming? For years we've heard that some of the smaller districts may end up in Galesburg someday. I know they've been able to hold their own pretty well over the course of time, but if this stalemate in Illinois financially goes on, is that something you're hearing anything about right now?
There's a lot to that question. I've been involved in two consolidations in my career, and you know it's not an easy thing. The hardest thing to kill is a school mascot. I think there's always going to be the push to do that, but at the end of the day, what you have to look at is, does a consolidation improve educational opportunities for students? That's number one. Number two, are there operating efficiencies that can be created by way of doing that? But the big issue, I think, is having a school in your community creates an identity for that community. And we have this thing in Illinois called local control. And so part of the difficulty is, if local taxpayers want to continue to pay the freight to keep their school in their community, there's a lot of conversation at the state level. Should we force something different if the local voters want to continue having their school? And that's a hard issue for any elected official. What you find when you look at the consolidations out here in this part of the state, and I've been here my whole career in this part of the state, we create big districts. Last week, the superintendent at United, Jeff Whitsitt, and I went down and testified at the governor's Education Funding Reform Commission. And Jeff made the point that his district is 300 and I believe he said 80 square miles. New York City is 423 square miles.
Wow. That puts that in perspective.
So put it in perspective. How long do you want to have kids on a bus before they even get to school? So there's a lot of issues. It works when it does, but it's not a Band-Aid that you can put on every situation.
Yeah, because you look at some of Rova's another one like that, square miles. Olympia is just ridiculous,
Olympia.
the square mileage it covers in McLean and what part of Logan County, I think, too. And so then you got all these other transportation issues on top of that, and then possible not getting your grants for funding for transportation, and it just adds to the nightmare. Galesburg District 205 Superintendent Ralph Grimm joining us here this morning. So right now, there's nine different proposals or scenarios, and again, nothing is decided yet. We don't know what's going to happen with the state. I mean, what would it take for one of these nine proposals not to happen? Would it take, I mean, honestly, would it be a miracle? Because even if they do, even if the state gets a budget, that still doesn't mean you're getting, one, the funding you're due in the next fiscal year, let alone all of the back pay that the district is owed.
Well, I think the conversation needs to happen, continue at the board level. The board, I believe, will tell us in February or maybe even in March, you know, let's identify one or two options and then let's get community input. And then decide how best to go forward. I'm not advocating one option over another. I'm not forcing the board to do this, and I won't tell the board that you absolutely have to do this. That's not my job. My job is to put the information in front of them, and then if they ask me my opinion, I'll give it. If they ask for a recommendation, I'll give it. But I'm not trying to push them one way or the other. But in my professional judgment, they need to do something. There will be operational savings by closing a building or a combination of buildings. There will be educational benefit to our students by grouping grades differently than we do now, putting teachers together so they can collaborate, they can talk, they can cooperate. And I think it makes a lot more sense.
If one of these options does happen, are we talking in the 2017-18 school year? I mean, that soon that something like this would happen, or would it be pushed back another year? Or,
well, what I'm trying to do is let the board move this along at their pace. We've laid out a tentative timeline from start to finish before we would start to, you know, be moving kids, and theoretically that could be three and a half, four years before everything is complete. Now, what people need to remember is, in the ensuing time frame, costs are going up, the cost of material, cost of labor, the cost to borrow money quite possibly could go up. We know the cost to borrow money went up in December when the Fed raised the prime rate, and there's talk that they'll do that again, so that will increase costs a little bit. There is some sense of urgency because of the pressure on the budget, but I think in this particular case, taking our time and making the right decision and communicating that it is the right decision with our stakeholders is the prudent approach, and one that I'm going to continue to recommend the board look at.
Ralph, we're always impressed with the quality of the superintendents in our area, Rova, Knoxville, United, Monmouth, Roseville, the two gentlemen that have been in Abingdon have shared the duties, and they've got a world of experience. Do you ever, you guys, I mean, especially in this day and age, just pick up the phone once in a while and go, what's going on there? Just vent a little bit. I mean, you've got to do that, I would think, and with as much knowledge as there is, maybe help each other out.
Well, we do, and I'm proud to say that I count all of those gentlemen as friends, and we do talk on a regular basis. We cooperate. We try and help each other because we know that the problem that I have today could be the problem they deal with tomorrow and vice versa. And you know, we're kind of unique out here. All of the superintendents in the area schools, you know, have kept their districts together. They've kept them operational. And frankly, I think we're doing some of our best work in terms of educating kids right now. Many other businesses, given the financial things that have happened to us, would have folded. They'd simply close their doors. We can't do that. Our kids depend on us. And it's not just the administrators and the superintendents. It's the teachers. It's the bus drivers, the cooks, the secretaries, the janitors. It's everybody who continuously answer the bell to do more with less because of one reason, the kids who attend our schools.
Anything else in closing you'd like to add that you think people need to know?
Well, I just want to encourage people. I've said this many times before, and I've in fact had people come in. You know, please, I would encourage all of your listeners, become informed. You know, the numbers don't lie. I present the numbers. People can draw their own conclusions, but question certain statements that are made about the board's motives or my motives. What we're trying to do is best for kids. You know, I know that change is not popular. I know the message that I'm delivering is not popular, and so you know, folks want to shoot the messenger, whether it be me or the board. And what we really need to do is stop this conversation that, well, it's the administration that's doing this or it's the board that's doing this. We've got to stop that conversation in this community because at the end of the day, the board, the administration, the teachers, the unions, we're all here for one thing. And the only way we get through this is to work together, to come to the table and cooperate and communicate and stop trying to be divisive, to listen, to offer suggestions. It's one thing to criticize. It's another thing to be able to say, you know, I don't agree, but here's another option that you can think about. And when that happens, we get a tremendous synergy and better decisions can be made. But if the only option is to shoot the messenger and to criticize and to cast doubt in the minds of our stakeholders about our motives, our intentions, or our data, we're going to struggle. And it doesn't need to be that way. It can be so much better. It's how it's operated in the other districts that I served. It's how it operates in the majority of districts across the state. And that's what we need to have happen here.
Contact your legislators. It starts at the state level. I mean, locally, obviously, Dan Swanson is going to be in as our new 74th District State Representative. You can contact him, contact Senator Chuck Weaver. But honestly, starting at the top, Governor Bruce Rauner, Senate President John Cullerton, and House Speaker Michael Madigan, that's contact them. Let them know about your displeasure of what they're doing to not only us, but every district in the state of Illinois.
Well, I would second that, and I really think that made a difference in us getting an education budget last June. I really believe when people stood up and said, you've got to take care of kids, that put enough pressure on our politicians and the leaders to get it done. And let me just say, if I may, yesterday ended the, in my opinion, remarkable career of John Sullivan and Don Moffitt. I've had the pleasure of working with both of those gentlemen. It was always so heartening to watch them work together for the good of the region. They were from two different political parties, two different houses, but they kept the needs of the region first and foremost. They worked hard. And I think they did a good job for the constituents that they represented, and I want to thank them for their work and their service.
Galesburg District 205 Superintendent Ralph Grimm joining us. Ralph, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Always appreciate the opportunity, and thank you so much for all you do to promote what we're doing in public education and District 205 particularly.